We would like to take a moment to thank our sponsor, Preborn. When a mother meets her baby on an ultrasound and hears their heartbeat, it's a divine connection, and the majority of the time, she will choose life. But she can't do it without our help. Preborn needs us, the pro-life community, to come alongside her. One ultrasound is just $28. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. Or visit preborn.com.
Hi, it's Sandy Rios, your old friend from The Morning Show. So many crucial and frightening events are unfolding before our eyes. I'd like to invite you to come over to the podcast, Sandy Rios 24/7, so that we can work our way through these difficult times together. AFR.net, any podcast platform, or at sandyrios.com. And one more thing, my book, God's Velvet Hammer, is now available on Audible. So come join us at Sandy Rios 24/7, and remember, God's Velvet Hammer, available at Audible.
Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
I love talking about the things of God because of truth and the biblical worldview.
The U.S. Constitution obligates our government to preserve and protect the rights that our founders recognize come from God, our Creator, not our government. I believe that Scripture in the Bible is very clear that God is the one that raised up each of you, and God has allowed us to be brought here to this specific moment in time.
This is Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Good morning. Good morning. Well, it is Wednesday, October 30th, and we are under less than a week away from the 2024 election. So, of course, all of the news is about predictions. And, of course, we all heard Joe Biden basically throw Kamala Harris's entire campaign under the bus last night when, Hillary Clinton had the basket of deplorables and then Joe Biden came out with calling Trump supporters garbage. So, if you think that the left hates you, you probably are actually giving them too much credit. I think it's much, much worse than that. They just want utter power and control, do not care about representing their constituency, don't care about the regular Americans, and just want power. And that's their worldview. I mean, it's not just about the last name of Clinton or Biden or Harris. And as we've continued to talk about on this program, it all really does boil down to the worldview of government and what you believe as a voter is the purpose of government. Should we have more tyranny and more of the elites, like what the Democrats suggest, that they can just enforce whatever they would like because they know better than you? Or do you want to go to the far other end, which is more the libertarian bent, and just say, well, we should be free to do whatever we want, and government is an evil institution because we don't want to have any accountability whatsoever? Well, conservatives are a little more to the middle than that, and actually conserving a biblical worldview, a rightful worldview of government, to say that we need to have a well-ordered society. We need to make sure that the government is limited to its proper place, but that there are sufficient guardrails to make sure that we, as members of our individual societies, make sure that our rights are protected and our neighbor can't just do whatever they want that affects us. And this gets us to some of these citizens' initiatives and the state constitutional amendments that we've been talking about. We'll talk about some of the abortion amendments on the ballot later on in the program throughout the country and kind of what the projections are on those, and everyone should vote no on all of those. But one of the other big ones that we've been talking about, and I was on Today's Issues yesterday talking about this one as well, is Amendment 3 here in the state of Florida. This is legalizing recreational marijuana, but without any guardrails to protect public spaces. And joining me now to discuss how this would affect the community and especially children is Dr. Eric Hall, who is the secretary, Florida's Secretary of Department of Juvenile Justice. And we also have Secretary Siobhan Harris back with us this morning for the Department of Children and Families. So good morning, Secretaries Harris and Hall.
Good morning.
Good morning. And Dr. Hall, do we have you as well?
Yes, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. Well, I'll start with you, sir, because, this amendment in Florida, Amendment 3, I am originally from Colorado, as my regular listeners know, And yeah, I was there, of course, when unfortunately Colorado was one of the first two states to legalize marijuana through constitutional amendments, cementing a right in the state constitution to access recreational marijuana. And it has been utterly devastating to that state. I mean, that is a cautionary tale. And the biggest thing, I think, and I want to get your opinion on this, for Amendment 3 in Florida, is that it doesn't actually protect public spaces. And so, in theory, I mean, someone could just walk in with, you know, to a school, to a public park where children are present, to theme parks and, you know, other things, with marijuana. And so even if somebody is saying, well, you know, it really isn't the government's job to regulate this as heavily and say, no, you can't have recreational marijuana. This amendment is so poorly written. So what say you to that, Dr. Hall?
No, I appreciate that, Jenna. And again, good morning, and thanks for having me on. You know, I think a couple things I'll kind of point out. Look, this is important to me, not just as, you know, Secretary for Department of Juvenile Justice, but as a parent of two teenagers, someone who's been a lifelong educator and worked in our education system, and really just someone I've dedicated my entire career to working to ensure the success of children. And I think when you, you know, look at this amendment, and, you know, I think an important point that you just brought up is making sure that, you know, the voters really read the full amendment. You know, we keep talking about that, I think, over and over, understanding that it's more than just what people might see on the ballot itself. You know, when you think about, you know, you mentioned schools, or you hear about parks, or you hear about all these public spaces, and just, you know, the odor alone and some of those impacts of the quality of life that we've come to appreciate here in Florida, out at our beaches and other areas. You know, we're a state that loves the outdoors. We're the Sunshine State. So, again, having, you know, the great resources that we have in Florida alone make the quality of life here so great to the average Floridian. And I think to really, you know, look at a situation where we have this broad exposure to, you know, marijuana, the impacts on children, especially when we look at some of the research out there. You know, it's also it's those health impacts. So looking at, you know, elevated rates of depression, anxiety, suicidal ideation, and even some of the studies out there showing that, you know, someone who's using marijuana, in this case, when we talk about adolescents with a developing brain, you know, 3.5 times greater risk of actually attempting suicide. So it's the quality of life discussion that we've got to have here in Florida, but it's also the health impacts on our young people. And to me, as someone who, again, looks at this as a parent and as an educator, look at all the great things we've done in our state in the areas of education alone, and look at the outcomes that we're achieving for the young people, where Florida really is considered a national leader in things like education. And to see that we're going to introduce something where bad actors and others can get, you know, something like marijuana so much more easily and readily available in the hands of kids, we need to think twice about that. And that is, again, about making sure that we're creating a system and support that shows that this has no place in Florida. You know, I never imagined as a lifelong Floridian, you know, for the most part growing up here and thinking about something like this being here in our state.
Yeah, I mean, one of the reasons, one of the big reasons I left Colorado is because it's gone so far off the rails with the legalization of recreational marijuana, and how much there have been so many devastating impacts to the state. And I don't want the same thing to happen here in Florida. And Secretary Harris, I mean, certainly it's not just Colorado and California that have suffered these types of consequences, but, you know, this seems to be more and more prevalent that unfortunately, you know, drugs and abortions are popular, unfortunately. And so you have things like Amendments 3 and 4 that are on the ballot in Florida that the advocates of these amendments are suggesting, well, the, you know, the legislature won't do what we want, so this reflects the will of the people. But our entire process is so that we don't just have this sort of mob rule to say that the degenerates of society who want prolific drug use recreationally don't get their way over and above good moral guardrails in society. And so just from a cultural standpoint, and, you know, you mentioned yesterday on the program, you know, that you're a mother as well, and, you know, seeing all of these things, you know, what does this tell you about the culture of the whole country, that things like this even have the opportunity to potentially pass?
Thank you, Jenna. Happy to be joining you again. You know, you raise an excellent point. I mean, I think what makes our country great is that we are founded on morals and principles of really trying to have a society of upstanding individuals who are able to live the American dream. And I personally feel like when you introduce legislation in the form of a constitutional amendment, that really would encourage substance use, you are essentially lowering standards in our society. I mean, the reality is that it is an addictive substance. It does lower your cognitive function. It is going to pose a public safety risk. We know in states that have legalized it, there are more car accidents, more emergency room visits, more calls to poison control centers. Why would we want to do this? And I personally really hold near and dear and true to the fact that we have elected officials who are put in roles to represent us before the legislature, and to advocate and to represent us in the form of developing sound policy and bills. And I feel like this end run that's coming in the form of these constitutional amendments are concerning, especially when you think about the way that it is occurring. Millions of dollars being poured in through special interests. Is that the way we want to govern? Is that the society that we want to live in? If you don't like what your legislature is doing, just find a multi-million dollar backer who can get an amendment on the ballot. I just don't think that is consistent with the way we want our society run.
Yeah, that's very well said. And we do have process for a reason. And some of these citizens' initiatives are very deceptive, even just in the language, and people don't really understand oftentimes what they're voting for. And so, you know, Secretary Hall, a lot has been made by Governor DeSantis and others from his administration, including all of you, from the standpoint of the public spaces. And so how would this really work? Because some of the pushback that I've seen from some on social media is that the legislature has full control over implementation if this were to pass, and so they could put up those guardrails. But my understanding is that because of the language, it would actually handcuff the legislature from really doing more, because there isn't anything to protect public spaces. So can you clarify that?
No, I appreciate that. And I agree. I mean, I think when you look at the full amendment itself and you look at, you know, really the lack of discretion that it gives the legislative body to be able to put guardrails around, you know, what's being presented to the voters, it is limiting. And, you know, when you talk about the public spaces, you know, and you mentioned coming from Colorado, I mean, when you go out and you see how these shops pop up on every corner, you know, being able to sell and distribute, you know, these are not, you know, local owned businesses many times. This is really being led, you know, by these big corporations that have put a lot of money into bringing this to pass because of the potential, you know, profits that come with it. And, you know, I think, again, there's very little, as again, to put some safety protocols and things like that in place, especially on the public spaces. The way the amendment is written, it does not appear to give the legislative body a lot of discretion in putting those parameters in place.
And that's genuinely very concerning, because even in Colorado, with, you know, some of the ways that they've tried to put up some of the guardrails, which haven't really been all that successful, frankly, and at least in my experience and opinion from that state, and I go back to visit fairly frequently, and you just smell it everywhere. I mean, even at the airport in the drop-off lane, like you get out of the car and you just can smell it everywhere. And so practically speaking, what would this look like at a public park or at even one of the theme parks or hotels that are private property? Would this amendment allow for any sort of way that a private property owner like that could at least say, you know, no, we don't want to have even a smoking section here?
I think to that point, you know, I hear these stories and these concerns. If you're someone that lives in an apartment and, you know, going back to public spaces, the odor and the exposure you're going to see in spaces like that is probably going to be elevated. You're going to see, you know, higher, you know, concentrations of individuals out there in these public spaces, potentially like at our beaches and other areas. And again, all the things that we're known for here in Florida, you mentioned the parks, the, you know, the recreational opportunities that we have. Again, the limitations that seem to be in place based on what this amendment is presenting does not give our legislative body the ability to really control for that in the way that I think a lot of us would want to see, you know, based on the things that we enjoy. You know, I don't want my kids exposed to this, you know, any more than there's already risk in place, you know, in current day, you know, and think about how that risk is just going to, the exponential based on the lack of parameters and the ability that the legislative body is going to be able to really, you know, craft and impose, I think is seriously concerning, you know, for anybody that's really taken the time to read the full amendment itself.
Yeah, and Secretary Harris, just quickly, because we're already out of time, what is the likelihood that this fails? I mean, what are you seeing, at least in the polls or what we know about early voting?
I certainly hope it fails. I think that we are doing our darndest to try to do everything that we can to educate voters on the dangers and the risks. I'll just quickly say, you know, I agree with Secretary Hall. As a mom, I don't want to have these conversations with my kids, going into public spaces and having to talk about, oh, that smell, that odor, what it is. I also think it really creates this laissez-faire attitude around substance use, and that worries me when you look at the statistics around the dangers of substance use. And some may argue that it's not a gateway drug, but I can tell you I've heard countless stories from individuals, from adults, who talk about starting to use marijuana recreationally.
It is. It is. And we'll have to end it there, but we'll be right back with more. Could the fate of America's children be tied to the fate of our nation itself? Much like the abortionists who end the lives of the unborn, the left is determined to undermine the pro-life movement. First, they target the babies. Then they come for the rest of us. Preborn stands as a beacon of hope for the most defenseless among us, preborn babies. Every day, Preborn's network of clinics rescue, on average, over 200 babies while surrounding expectant mothers with God's love and offering a free ultrasound. Rescuing the miracle of life has never been more crucial as we navigate this time of moral decline in our nation. Will you join Preborn in protecting the least among us? For just $28, you can sponsor an ultrasound and give a mother the chance to choose life, not only for her baby, but for herself. An ultrasound doubles a baby's chance at life. To donate securely, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby. Or go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com/AFR. Preborn.com/AFR.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. And of course, we are talking about the 2024 election upcoming and how important it is to get out and vote our values as Christians and engage as the constitutional republic that we still live in, that has a lot of elements of democracy embedded into our republic. And one of those things in a self-governing society is that we as citizens actually get to select and prefer our leaders. And we also get to decide on issues on the ballot, like we've been talking about with amendments 3 and 4 here in Florida and all of these other ballot propositions across the country. Know what is on the ballot in your state and know how you should vote on that and how what reflects the biblical worldview and truth. There are election integrity measures in probably half the states or so. Some of them good, some of them not so good. So to make sure that you're not just going in to the voting booth or pulling out, you know, your mail-in ballot and just reading the summary, not really sure what you should do, and then just kind of deciding either way. You really want to be informed and educated, and you still have a lot of time with that. And so whatever the topic is, as I've continued to advocate for, AFA Action has a lot of information about ballot initiatives. We also, you know, of course, as a nonprofit, don't endorse specific candidates, but can tell you at least their positions on issues that should inform you on how to vote your values. And then you can also go to other organizations that you trust and have trusted prior to this election to give you their view on these candidates and on ballot initiatives and so forth. And, you know, one of the things that we've also been talking about is the engagement of Christians and how this this Barna survey that has come out recently suggesting that upwards of 30 million church-going self-identified Christians. So these are people who aren't just calling themselves Christians, but actually at least overtly engaging in some way with a church, whether you know, that means that they're getting good theology or not is, of course, a question. But so at least, you know, beyond just Christian in name only, or the Cenos, not to be confused with chinos like the pants, but Cenos, these are people who are going to sit at home for some reason, whether it's because of the top of the ticket or because they just don't care, or maybe it's because their pastor isn't teaching biblical values and isn't making that practical application from theology into practice. And so to discuss all of this and break it down more, I'd like to welcome in Pastor and Dr. Willie Rice. He's the pastor of Calvary Church here in Clearwater, Florida. So good morning, Pastor Willie, and really appreciate you being on this morning.
Good morning, Gene. It's great to be with you.
Yeah, so you know, so I know you've seen this Barna survey, and of course we can look to prior elections to see, you know, what is the evangelical or faith-based turnout as a whole. But what do you attribute the people who choose to just abstain or to not engage? What do you attribute that to in the church?
You know, there are a couple of factors, I think, at play. I think one of the factors is that over the last 20 or 30 years, I think there has been a kind of movement, influences, and sometimes very high-profile influencers in evangelical life, and who have really, maybe almost as a reaction to what they saw as overt politicism in the last part of the 20th century, you know, the moral majority. Maybe they kind of had a reaction to that. Maybe they felt like some of it went too far, and they felt like it was too closely aligned to one party and so forth. So you have a lot of key influencers in the last 25 years who really said as much as we need to take a step back from political affairs. There was this sense of, you know, if you prioritize the gospel and if you prioritize the mission of the church, as we do, to preach the gospel, to make disciples, that it's almost a more spiritual to withdraw from these political affairs, which is, you know, politics is nasty, difficult work, all of that, and de-emphasize being involved in politics. And I think that has had a cumulative effect, and I think it's had a very debilitating effect on the ability and the responsibility of churches to influence in political affairs.
That's really well said, and I could not agree more. We've seen this push, and also the trend, unfortunately, of culture as well, that didn't begin with the sexual revolution, you know, in the 60s, but certainly that has had a profound impact on a lot of the ways that even Christians, unfortunately, think about politics. Because I've heard even self-described and self-proclaimed Christians say, well, for example, you know, I wouldn't have an abortion, but who am I to say that the government should restrict someone else's choice, because I don't know everything going on in their lives? Or, you know, I wouldn't have a gay marriage, but, you know, I'm who is the government to tell two people that they can't do that? And so there's almost this very libertarian with a capital R kind of mentality, or capital L rather. I can't spell apparently at 8 in the morning, and that's fine. But you know, they have this kind of this mentality that you know, we can't enforce bright line morality as part of the government, and that ideology I think is so harmful.
Well, it is. You can't overestimate how the sexual revolution and the ideologies that justify it have impacted Christians and the church and our thinking, like a fish in water. It's almost like we don't understand the environment we ourselves are in and how naturally those kind of compromises roll off our evangelical tongues, even as we sing a hymn one moment and then say such things the next moment. And the reality is what you're saying is absolutely true. There is a failure to connect the dots about convictional truth and how, you know, loving your neighbor and caring for your culture means contending for convictional truth. Marriage is one thing. It is created by God. You don't get to redefine reality. And, you know, as one example, and yet those kinds of convictions have waned in too many evangelical churches, and it starts with the pulpit and it starts with the leaders.
Yeah, and it's really unfortunate. Pastor Willie Rice, who's the pastor of Calvary Church in Clearwater, Florida, my special guest this morning, it's very unfortunate that pastors who it is their duty and obligation as ministers of truth to not connect the theology and the biblical morality into a Christian civic life, that we have this, as one of my favorite authors, Nancy Piercy, suggests, kind of this secular sacred divide, where we say, yeah, okay, the things of the church are sacred, but when we're talking about the government is by definition secular, where I would push back on that and say, well, no, by definition, the government is sacred as well, because God himself ordained the institution of civil government, and we see throughout scripture how the parameters of government are supposed to be limited and still in acting legitimately under God's authority. So how would you suggest in just this last week that pastors, you know, we have one more Sunday before Election Day, yeah, that pastors need to encourage their members to engage and have a very different view of government than what has become mainstream over the last, especially 20 years, but even, you know, 40 to 60 years?
Yeah, we're going to, you know, rethinking and reorienting our outlook in a more healthy and holistic way is going to take a little bit of work. But what I would say to any pastor, particularly in the state of Florida, but this goes probably across the country to other people listening in, there are moments and there are issues about which, without any ambivalence or ambiguity at all, we should feel emboldened and indeed responsible to speak. Amendment 4 is one of those issues. This goes right to the heart of Christian conviction, Christian character, Christian morality, biblical truth, human justice, go run on down the list. And Amendment 4 is such a heinous and deceptive amendment. And there is so much on the line. This is one of those clear-cut issues. If you can't speak about this, it's like turning your card. What are you ever going to speak up against? And so this is just a moment for even somebody who maybe has, you know, maybe inadvertently kind of laid aside a prophetic mantle to speak into cultural issues, to pick it back up and to realize, hey, this is a moment I need to speak. And without apology, without ambiguity, I think every Bible-believing pastor ought to stand in their pulpit this Sunday and say as clearly as they possibly can, you need to vote no on Amendment 4. It is consistent with our Christian conviction, and to do otherwise is inconsistent with our Christian conviction.
So well said. And I hope that for the pastors listening and for the church members who are listening, encourage your pastors. Here in Florida, Amendment 4 obviously is on the ballot. But if you are in one of those other 9 states where abortion is also on the ballot and you should be voting no, encourage your pastor to stand up and very clearly say that this Sunday. And, you know, Pastor Rice, you know, one of the other things, you know, you mentioned the whole moral majority in that kind of era. I worked previously for a nonprofit, and you know, I've worked for Dr. Dobson, for example, as policy director. One of the one of the other people in his office, I remember, you know, wanting to engage on some of these policy issues, and we had this kind of lengthy conversation of, you know, well, I think we should only engage on things that are specifically Christian, like, you know, the life issue, religious freedom, and things that, you know, are obviously Christian. And my pushback to that was, well, wait a minute, everything in public policy, you either have a biblical worldview or you have a false one. And it's incumbent upon people who are engaged in civil government, which means every voter, but especially for organizations that provide that information to Christians, to be involved in every issue. And I think it's really sad to see how some Christians only see things like Amendment 4, if they do, if at all. But then they go, okay, well, I can understand that. But, you know, on things like, you know, economic policy, right, you know, that's not specifically Christian. You know, what would you say to that?
I would say you're exactly right. Again, to me, Amendment 4 is just one of those clear issues every pastor ought to, you know, stand up and speak about. But you're right. What we need is not just to tell people what to do, but how to think, how to process these issues through a biblical worldview. And I'm sure you would agree, there are, of course, public policy issues that people who possess a biblical worldview might disagree on. You know, how do I draw the budget? What number of, on a given topic do we land on? Those are matters that, again, good people can debate and converse. But all of those matters should be processed through a biblical worldview, understanding God and man and the nature of sin and the hope of Christ and what forms good, positive civilization. If you do that, it does inform, obviously, everything from economic policy to immigration policy to everything. So I do understand that Christians can disagree on some technicalities of public policy. You know, where do you set the tax rate? Where do you, in a local school board election? But we do need to understand that everything comes under the lordship of Christ, the sovereignty of God, and we should process all of life through a biblical worldview and help our people do that. I know pastors can't do that in a few days, but we need to understand that I think effective ministry in the coming years in this culture in which we are is going to require helping people think like that.
Amen and amen. And this is where pastors need to start. Start it this Sunday so that in the next election, in the midterms, you'll have laid the groundwork for 2 years and be teaching and preaching biblical truth and the application to the Christian life each and every Sunday. So Pastor Willie Rice, really appreciate it. We'll be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back, and we are talking about voting our values as Christians, engaging in civil government, making sure that not only are we praying for government, praying for those in leadership and at least government power over us, that we pray that they would follow truth and follow biblical values, but then also taking our responsibility as citizens. And in our constitutional republic, we have not only the option, but the obligation and the duty to participate, because this society is of the people, by the people, and for the people. So we, the people, have a part in the government where we can select and prefer our leaders. We can vote on issues like when abortion regulation is on the ballot, or election integrity measures, or things like Amendment 3 and legalizing recreational marijuana. I mean, all of those things we have a say in. We are not just appealing to the authorities over us to do the right thing. We actually, as governors of our own society and faithful stewards, hopefully, of our citizenship, we can engage and actually affect the outcome. So I want to bring in Father Frank Pavone, who's the founder of Priests for Life and one of the best advocates for the pro-life position in the nation, to talk about where we stand, not just here in Florida, where both of us are at, actually, and Amendment 4, but all of the other abortion regulation propositions across the country, and where the pro-life movement is actually at. So good morning, Frank, and great to have you on.
Hi, Jenna. It's great to be with you, especially so close to the culmination of this very long election season.
Yes, and you sound way more pumped, I think, than a lot of people. I've seen so many people going, man, let's just get through this next week. And, we're kind of, but I always love that about you. You're always just fired up, ready to go and fight the good fight. So where do we sit as the pro-life movement a week out? What are you seeing and hearing?
Well, I'm seeing some actually very encouraging movement in the polls. And, the 10 states that have these pro-abortion ballot measures, the vote is no on all of them. That's the only, you were talking earlier about voting your values. And, I was thinking about, when people look at a candidate, they might say, well, my values don't align with them on this, that, or the other thing, but they do align with them on these other areas. And so people may feel conflicted when they're choosing a candidate. But when you're talking about these abortion ballot measures, there's no room there for conflict. There's no multiple considerations. It's just, do we want to protect these babies, or do we want them to be killed without any limit, without any regulation? And so we've always said that the no campaign, which we're engaged in these states, has an advantage with time. And it's being reflected in the polling because initially, you know, people will hear these amendments are very cleverly worded. Oh, it's about freedom. Oh, it's about limiting government interference. Oh, it's about this and reproductive rights and health. And people first hear this and they say, hey, that sounds pretty good. But then as the no campaign proceeds, and I've been very impressed by the energy, the unity, the activity in these states for pro-life, people begin to say, well, gee, it's not as good as it sounded at first. So we see, for example, here in Florida, at first, the polling was way, way above. In fact, I think the highest poll is like 69% in favor, and we need 60% for it to pass. But now it's more like in the low 50s. And as these campaigns of education go on, and you know, really no governor in any of these states is doing better than our own governor DeSantis has been doing in getting behind the no vote on Amendment 4, having press conferences with medical personnel. I mean, he's been doing so, so great on this. And that's one of the reasons that we seem to be succeeding here in Florida. But we take nothing for granted. I saw some very good polling recently out of South Dakota. They have Amendment G. And it looks like it's about neck and neck with still some people undecided. I was out in Nebraska recently, Jenna, with the governor there, who's also a great pro-life governor, and they seem to be neck and neck. Their unique situation is that they have two amendments, one pro-abortion and one pro-life. And what might very well happen there is that both of the amendments would get more than 50%, which then would mean that the one with the more votes would win. But I also just saw yesterday some polling that had the opposition to the pro-life measure in Nebraska at 40%, but the opposition to the pro-abortion measure at 64%. So I think we have a good chance here in Florida, in South Dakota, in Nebraska. Now, a lot of the more iffy states or problematic states, and I want to urge our listeners, it's not too late to make a difference, even if it's just on social media, would be Arizona, Colorado, Maryland, Missouri, and Montana, Nevada, New York, and those are the other ones besides the three I mentioned. So there's 10 altogether. Of course, pro-abortion states like Maryland and New York and Colorado, I mean, they're already so pro-abortion anyway that one would expect, the other side to be doing well. But nevertheless, stateballotmeasures.org, people can find details on each one of these 10 battles.
And these are so important. And it's very interesting, Father Frank Pavone, my special guest this morning, how this has now moved largely from a legislative debate into a state amendment debate. And I think that the left was very strategic, quite frankly, especially in states that do have heartbeat legislation and have more protections for the unborn and more restrictions on abortion, to say, well, fine, then we're just going to bypass your legislature and your governor, and we're going to go straight to the citizens and hope that we can get enough of them to either misunderstand what's on the ballot, not really know what they're voting for, or just simply that they're very pro-choice, and to get them to go through the citizens' initiatives and propositions on constitutional amendments. How is the pro-life movement as a whole responding to that?
Well, you point out something very important, that is the strategy. And ironically, what we should understand, and this is one of the ways we fight back, is to point out that in bypassing the legislature and the governors, they are, in fact, bypassing the people. They call it a citizens' initiative. However, when you propose something that is so complex, and it's not complex to say we got to save these babies instead of killing them, but complex in the sense that, as we've discussed that on previous episodes, over the course of 50 years, a lot of legislative and judicial work has hammered out certain points of consensus among the American people about abortion. There shouldn't be abortion throughout pregnancy. There should be parental involvement when it's a minor. There should be clinic safety regulations. There should be informed consent, and on and on. And what these amendments do is they sweep all that away in one step. Now, it's not really fair to the people to try to impose on them via the Constitution a position that is more extreme that they have ever embraced than they've ever embraced when they consider all those implications. And that's where it's unfair to the people, and it's short-circuiting, it's truncating the robust debate that the legislative process entails, even the judicial process as well, and that the U.S. Supreme Court was trying to encourage in passing Dobbs. When they handed down Dobbs, they weren't taking sides on abortion. They were saying the court is not going to decide for the American people on such a contentious and multifaceted issue. What do we do in response if these things pass? Well, we see in Michigan, for example, there are legal challenges being launched against the amendment that they passed back in 2022. Legal challenges saying what? Well, yes, it's a constitutional amendment, but it is depriving women of certain key protections that the pro-life laws were providing them, because a lot of these abortionists are unscrupulous. In fact, that's the rule, not the exception. And, Jenna, this is a point that we have to push back on as well, and we actually have some plans in the works in various states on this. What most people don't realize is that 60% of the abortions in America can be classified as coerced abortions. Now, let's let that sink in for a moment. The other side keeps saying freedom, freedom of choice. But way more than half of the women who have abortions, and we know this by studies, and we know this by ministering to them personally, said either a person or a circumstance that I couldn't change forced me to do something I didn't want to do and that I know is wrong and that I know I'm going to suffer for the rest of my life. 60% of abortions have absolutely nothing to do with freedom of choice and everything to do with feeling they had no freedom and no choice. Now, if you put a constitutional amendment in there that not only says abortion is legal, but that nothing can interfere with or delay it, the word delay, as you know, is in our Florida Amendment 4, well, then how's the state supposed to protect women against coerced abortions? So this is one of the ways we push back, continue the education, continue to show people this is the wrong choice. And if these things get into some constitutions, well, then, Jenna, from day one, we start the process of getting them back out. And that's what we're going to do.
Yeah, and that's very encouraging because, as of course you know, it is much, much more difficult to get them out than, unfortunately, to put them in. But it is possible, so it's not like, you know, this is cemented into a state constitution forever and it can't at least be amended or repealed later. But it is much harder because then you have to have that same threshold. Like here in Florida, you would then have to repeal it by 60% plus one. And so then the other right. side, instead of needing their 60%, would only need the 40% plus one. But it is possible, and this is where, Frank Pavone, we need to start changing the culture around these issues, and not just the culture in terms of the talking points and all those things, but I mean literally our culture, our community, and having a culture that respects the value of human life, the dignity and sanctity of human life, and understanding what an abortion actually is, and also understanding the legitimacy of government and our process of representative government. I mean, these are things that I think Governor DeSantis, as you rightly said, has been doing such an excellent job here in the state of Florida of educating people on that this isn't legislation, this isn't something that's easy to change, and you are basically abdicating your representation in the state legislature to the courts. That won't have that same ability for you to just go in and directly appeal. So for some of these legal challenges, though, speaking of the courts, there has been some news and some speculation that, you know, some of these signatures that actually got Amendment 4 here in Florida on the ballot to begin with are suspect and are being challenged. Have you seen anything on that, or is that a potential way that even if Amendment 4 in Florida passes, that it could eventually just be stopped because of some of the procedural problems?
Procedural problems, yes. We need to, first of all, be vigilant. I have heard multiple stories from, you know, fellow Floridians about how they were approached when the signature gathering process happened. And they were just outright lied to and pressured. And it was just very, very, I think that the, you know, the questions that arise, and I mean, all of this depends on, you know, what state law actually says, what provisions are in place or could be put in place. I think it's very important. Procedurally, the other side is tripping over themselves. There's a couple of examples of that. There's, of course, these claims here in Florida that should be investigated. And then, of course, you know, there is, like, for example, in New York, one of these 10 states I mentioned that has one of these abortion ballot measures. It almost got thrown off the ballot by the court in New York because the other side, in their rush to have unlimited abortion, skipped a couple of steps. Now, the court fixed that. They should have thrown it off the ballot, but they didn't. But then in Arkansas, they did. In Arkansas, there was, again, the procedurally, the other side skipped a couple of steps. And to their credit, the officials there in the state of Arkansas noticed the violation, took action, and got the thing thrown off the ballot. So Arkansas didn't have to have that fight this time. And then we've had in a couple of other states, Missouri and South Dakota too, various court battles preceding the vote that were focused on some of these matters. So we shouldn't drop that. I mean, if something was done the wrong way, you know, let's keep focused on it. And this shows the mindset of the left. They don't care about law and order. They don't care about law and order in the streets. They don't care about law and order at the border. They don't care about law and order in elections. And they don't care about law and order in these ballot measures. And it's a full, very consistent and very destructive mindset.
It is. And I'm speaking with Father Frank Pavone, who's the founder of Priests for Life. And he mentioned that, you know, you can go to priestsforlife.org and you can see all of the various states that are proposed constitutional amendments on abortion. You can also go to ivoterguide.com and afaaction.net. I mean, a lot of great resources on this to see, you know, where these battleground states are. So for those listening who said, okay, I early voted, I did my part, I voted, you know, my values on this, and now it just feels like I'm sitting back and waiting. What would you say to those to use their time effectively, particularly pastors, over the next week that we still have before the election?
You know, Jenna, I have a special page also called electionvideos.org. And just yesterday, one of the videos I added to that page was a sermon that pastors might want to use to get a couple of ideas for this coming weekend. Now, many churches use the same scripture readings, you know, on a Sunday. In other cases, of course, the pastor will choose them for himself. But the video is one example of what they can do on this final weekend before November 5th to really urge their people to vote in a biblical way and to see their voting as an act of love of God and love of neighbor. And that's the theme I developed in the sermon. It's actually a love of God and a love of neighbor. When we try to create a nation and policies and leaders that are best going to serve the people that God created and entrusted to one another as brothers and sisters. Well, that's one thing. Secondly, everybody really, there's no waiting here. This is not the time to wait. Everyone should be dedicating every ounce of energy that they have to reaching as many of their friends, relatives, fellow worshipers, church members, fellow members of different groups and organizations, and strangers too. And get out there, and you know, there's events that different groups are organizing for, like flag waving, you know, or just promoting public awareness. Contact the people, you know, make sure they voted. Make sure if they need help, where's my early voting location? Get them to vote even before Tuesday. Get out there and be just on social media, email, everything you can. Get people out there to vote. It's a numbers game, as it always is. And we have to just not only win, we have to win by big margins. And all the races too, to remind people, help other people to study their ballot. If you know somebody like Jenna, you mentioned iVoterGuide.com, great resource. We support them very strongly too. And people can get should get the sample ballot beforehand. Now, you may have received it in the mail, but to not just cast your ballot, we have to urge people to study their ballot so that whether it's these ballot measures or whether it's the candidates or judges they have to vote for or whatever, the first time they're seeing it shouldn't be the moment when they're actually casting their vote. They should see it ahead of time so they have time to research online, to consult people, to check at iVoterGuide.com or to check at the candidate's own website. So all of these are things people can and must be doing. And finally, prayer. We have a prayer website, electionprayer.com. Please pray more and more intensely and in great detail for this election.
Amen to that. Absolutely. We all should be on our knees and imploring God to continue to grant America the freedom and blessings of liberty that we have so enjoyed for the last 250 plus years. Frank Pavone, always appreciate your insights and keep up that enthusiasm for the last week ahead of the election. We'll be back tomorrow with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning. You can always reach me and my team, Jenna@AFR.net.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.
We'd like to thank our sponsors, including Preborn. Preborn has rescued over 200,000 babies from abortion, and every day their network clinics rescue 200 babies' lives. Will you join Preborn in loving and supporting young moms in crisis? Save a life today. Go to preborn.com.